Blog Talk Radio.
And all my football exclusive.
Back at it again. It's another edition of the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza Bonanza. And we're going to bring it to you live, uncut, and raw. The biggest, the baddest, the best NFL draft show on the planet right now for the next 120 minutes as we count you down. We are 13 days away from the NFL draft, people. Friday, April 15th, Extravaganza Part 1. And we're going to have a couple of follow-up episodes, Part 2 and 3. Stay tuned to the NFLDraftBible.com for details. I am your host for the next 2 hours, Rick Saratella. Join with me, I have Daniel Mogollon and the Reverend Ralph Mancini. We're going to welcome them in a little bit. But first, everybody, before we get started, jam-packed show, lots of great guests. Before we dive into it, want to let everybody know, log on to the NFLDraftBible.com. We are now 100% free. That's right, 100% free, putting all of our content online for you to read. We're talking about team needs, rookie reviews from the past year, player reports, rankings. We're going to be unveiling our final big board rankings over the next 2 weeks. So stay tuned to the NFLDraftBible.com for all the latest information. And, of course, if you're tuned in right now, then you already know, All Access Football right here on Blog Talk Radio. You can log on, check out all of our archives on the On the Clocks, On the Clock specials. We have special guest beat writers and players from each and every team, all 32 NFL teams in the can as of yesterday. So you can log on, check out our archives, listen to any team preview show, definitely the inside scoop. If you want to be in the know for the NFL draft, that's where you need to go. Okay, Rick Saratella, strap on your seatbelt, buckle up, because now I'm going to welcome in the stars of the show. First up, Daniel Mogollon, say hello to the people.
Hello, people. How's it going out there? I cannot believe it is less than 2 weeks away from Christmas time, baby. I can't wait.
And it's been a while since we did a show together, you know.
It has been too long.
It's good to see you, my friend. And, of course, you know, we couldn't be preaching about the NFL Draft Bible unless we had the good Reverend Ralph Mancini.
I am counting down the days, baby. I can't wait.
All right, guys. Like I said, we have a jam-packed lineup. I'm going to bring you the best guest that we can bring to you today. And next week, same time, same place, make sure you tune in. NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza Part 2. I just announced it, so there you have it. And now it's time to start the show. If you guys listen to All Access Football here on Blog Talk Radio, then you know yesterday, Draft Digest Weekly Show, we had Tywan Jones on from Eastern Washington, small school product who definitely raised some eyebrows yesterday at his pro day, Dan.
Yeah, he had a fantastic pro day, and we kind of thought he would. 4.35, 40-yard dash, that was not surprising at all. We know he's a speedster, a home run hitter, but wow, 40-inch vertical. Are you kidding me? When he told me that on the air, I was like, I got to confirm this because I don't know if this kid's hyping up his own numbers or not, but it's legit. 40-inch vertical, 11-inch broad jump. So this kid's got it all in terms of the athletic ability. Full package, Rick, and he met with a few teams there. I know the day before his workout, he said he sat down with the Cowboys, the Lions, the Chiefs, and the Eagles. He pointed out that the Chiefs running back coach really worked him out as a receiver. He wanted to see what he could do catching the ball out of the backfield. And then the day of the workout, he also sat down with the Bengals.
Tom Rathman in there too, right?
Tom Rathman was running the show. He was the main guy out there in California running the show for the workout. So he put him through all this stuff. And he said also coming up on Monday, he's going to South Beach. He's taking it down to South Beach, baby, and it's not the NBA playoffs we're talking about here, but he's meeting with the Miami Dolphins, and then he's going to be meeting with the Arizona Cardinals as well. So he's a really intriguing prospect, I think, somebody that we've kind of had on the radar before most people.
Yeah, you know, currently sitting right there about number five running back on our big board, Rev. Eastern Washington, small school product, struggled with some injuries, but you just heard it here, 4.35, 40. The kid can jump through the gymnasium, 40-inch vertical. We just heard Tom Rathman working him out. I can't even imagine a 1-2 punch with him and Frank Gore. But where do you see Tywan Jones projected and going after a very impressive pro day workout yesterday?
Well, you know, we always talk about those draft risers. I think that's what we're looking at right here. You know, I think, you know, before his pro day and before he got a lot of this buzz, I think, you know, a lot of people were viewing him maybe as a third or maybe a fourth round pick. Maybe at this point, he could even be a late second-round pick at this point. I mean, considering this guy's explosiveness, Dan just mentioned he had a 40-inch vertical, and that's why they have a vertical. That's why they measure that type of stuff, because a vertical indicates how explosive you are. And the other thing to look at with this kid is, you're talking about a former cornerback. That means he's got fluid hips. And you watch this guy in the open field, the way he gets in and out of his breaks, it's just something to watch. He's just a very, very exciting and explosive runner.
All right, Taiwan Jones, definitely one player that we will be monitoring leading up into the NFL draft. And tune into Draft Digest Weekly here with Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, and Ralph Mancini. Like I said, we have a lot of great guests for you this evening. We'll be joined by some NFL draft prospects, Rashard Carmichael, DeAndre McDaniel, Jarrell Casey, Quentin Carter. Later on in the show, we'll have John Jock Taylor from the Dallas Morning News, as well as George Martin, the NFL Alumni Association Director. We'll have an interesting conversation with him in regards to the current NFL labor lockout and what it all means to this incoming rookie class of 2011. But first, it is an NFL Draft Bible extravaganza, and what better way to kick that off than to start off with the beat writer of the Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers. We have the one, the only Tom Silverstein from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tom, I want to welcome you to the show, joined by Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini, and let's dive right into it now. Green Bay Packers, we know, number 32 there in the first round. Some people consider this to be a luxury pick, but are there any specific team needs that the team might be targeting?
Well, yeah, there are a couple needs. I mean, everybody has some kind of need. The thing with the Packers is that, you know, they're not suffering any devastating losses. I think they're going to probably lose Colin Jenkins in free agency, and that's a loss. Possibility that wide receiver James Jones could be gone as well. So, you know, really, I think probably at the top of the list, they need another defensive end. They'd like probably another outside pass rusher to complement Clay Matthews, but that's not an absolute necessity. They actually got away with it pretty well with the guys, you know, with some fill-in guys last year. I just think if the right guy's there and they can add them, they might do it. I think probably they've got to address the offensive line, you know, in some way, shape, or form. Left tackle Chad Clifton's going to be 35. They're probably going to lose Darren College. They're starting left guard in free agency. So I, of all the needs, I would say offensive line is the biggest, but I don't think they have to address it in the first round.
Hey, Tom, Ralph Mancini here. You know, I mean, you already addressed some of the needs out there, such as wide receiver, such as defensive line. But, you know, one area that a lot of people don't talk about is the tight end position. Now, on paper, it doesn't appear that, you know, tight end is a major position of need. But, you know, JerMichael Finley is going to be entering his walk year, and he's going to be asking for a lot of money down the road that, you know, the organization may or may not fork over. And also, Andrew Corliss, a rookie this past season, you know, he didn't exactly blossom last year. You know, he was kind of up and down. He dropped some catchable passes, and he needs a lot of work as a blocker. Do you think maybe not like in the early rounds, but somewhere down the line, the Packers will be focusing on the tight end position at all?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I wrote about that earlier this week. I really do. I agree with everything you said. You know, Finley's going to cost them a fortune, and I don't know if they'll be able to afford it. And, you know, they can always franchise them, but, you know, they might be in for a big fight on that one. Corliss, I thought, was very ordinary. You know, he's definitely has some potential, but I don't know if he has the makeup to be a great tight end or even a starting tight end. I do see them addressing it, and I'll tell you, if for some reason that Lance Kendricks dropped down to the end of the second round, I could see them taking him. I really could. He fits exactly what they like to do. You know, a guy who could split out, a guy who can play in line, a guy who could, you know, run the seam, get between the safeties. I would think, you know, if for some reason he could get to the end of the second round, I think they'd take him.
Hey, Tom, staying on the offensive end, we're big fans here of James Starks, the running back out of Buffalo, and he really performed well at the end of the season in the playoffs. But, you know, it took him a while to really crack the lineup and get some playing time. What are the thoughts in Green Bay about James Starks moving forward? Do they view him as a feature back? Do they think he's still more of a complimentary guy? And do you think running back could be a position they also address come draft week?
I think, you know, really realistically, I think he's their number one back going into camp. You know, Ryan Grant is a proven guy, you know, 1,400-yard rusher. But, you know, he's coming off an injury. He's getting a little up there in age. And Starks is an incredible talent, you know. How he slipped through, you know, six rounds, it was basically, mostly because he didn't play his senior year because of shoulder injury. But he's got real natural talent, real nice, you know, fluid motion. He always goes forward, you know. He almost never gets dropped for a loss. He's got 4.4 speed. He's a former, you know, high school quarterback. He's just got a lot of talent. He's a little bit upright, and I think that might, you know, affect his longevity. But as long as he keeps holding on to the ball, I think the guy's their starting running back. I think you'll see him and Grant share some of the carries. But Starks has really got a lot of talent, big upside. I could see them taking a back, definitely, because, you know, they probably will lose Brandon Jackson, their third down back, in free agency. He wants to be a starter somewhere. They need to get, you know, they need kind of like a scat back type guy. Now, they require that guy to block a lot, so he can't be, you know, a 5'6 guy or something like that. He's got to have some strength and blocking ability. But, you know, if they can get someone who can, you know, break it on third downs, I think they would consider it.
Talking to Tom Silverstein here of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Green Bay Packers. You know, Tom, you mentioned some key free agents. You know, when you're the defending Super Bowl champions, other teams are always trying to raid your roster. And you mentioned a couple of players like a Brandon Jackson, a Cullen Jenkins, even a James Jones. You know, there's a very good chance that the Packers may lose all three of those players. When the NFL free agency does resume, do you think the Packers will be much of a player? Do you think they'll be looking to replenish some of their losses through free agency? Or will Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy and company look to maybe address their needs through the draft, do you think?
Yeah, I would be shocked if they signed anybody in free agency. It's not Ted Thompson's cup of tea. He's shied away from that. You know, they'll often, you know, every once in a while they'll add a complimentary player at a position that might be a little bit thin. But this is a team that's pretty loaded, and they have young players behind, you know, some of their young players. I mean, they just have a lot of depth. And they're really into developing young players and sort of bringing them through the system. And I don't see it, you know, really a spot where they would bring in anybody. You know, maybe if they lose Jones, they might bring in a receiver. You know, it could be someone if they get to, you know, a situation where they don't like, you know, the guys that they brought in late, you know, or the guys they drafted late, or there weren't any free agents, then I could see them maybe, you know, going for a veteran wide receiver. But I would be really surprised if they signed anybody.
Hey, Tom, staying on the free agent theme, what's the story with linebacker Nick Barnett? Now, when this guy is healthy, he brings a lot of energy to the defense. But, you know, with the emergence last year of guys like Desmond Bishop and A.J. Hawk being, you know, one of the key members of that defense as well, I mean, is there room for a guy like Barnett on that team?
I don't think so. I mean, I think really Bishop and Hawk are the starters, and they've been paid like starters. They both got new contracts. You know, Hawk, they didn't pay the guy $10 million guaranteed to, you know, be a first down backer. So he's going to be in the lineup at every down. And Bishop is really a good player. I think Barnett might be playing somewhere else. You know, they've talked about, well, you know, we had injuries there last year. We need, you know, more guys. Barnett's not going to be a happy camper if he's not a starter. They'll let him compete, but I think if I had to guess the scenario, it would be that they'd ask him for a pay cut, he'd refuse, and then, you know, he's playing somewhere else.
Talking to Tom Silverstein, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza. And, Tom, one last one before we let you go. You know, obviously the Packers are picking 32nd overall. It's kind of hard to project who they're going to select and put them on the clock. But any players or prospects that you're hearing about that maybe, you know, some players that the Packers are monitoring to see who might fall to them at the 32nd clock?
Well, you know, that's one of the things about great things about covering Ted Thompson is you're never going to get beat on missing out on who they're following because nobody knows. Nobody except him knows. He doesn't even really tell McCarthy until a couple of days before the draft who he's really thinking about at the, you know, at his pick. So it's very hard to come by any information on what they're looking at. I truly think, you know, it's a cliche, you know, and everybody talks about it and doesn't always do it. But really, I think he's in a position where he can take whoever tops on his board. I think he's sort of like a catcher, you know. He's just waiting to see what's slipping by, and he'll catch the best one of them. You know, I don't think he's a hunter. I don't think he's looking to move up. I don't think he's necessarily looking to move down. I think it'll come down to, you know, who is that guy who slips through? You know, is it Mark Ingram? You know, could they take him? I could see him doing that at 32. You know, could Karimi slip for some reason? Maybe, you know, maybe they go there. There's so many different, you know, ways they could go that, you know, I just think it'll be whoever is the top guy on their board.
All right, well, there you have it, the inside scoop, ladies and gentlemen, from Tom Silverstein, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter for the Green Bay Packers, also a member of the Pro Football's Writers Association. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Tom Silverstein right now. He has a team needs breakdown, position by position, for the Green Bay Packers there on his Twitter, so make sure you follow him, at Tom Silverstein. And Tom, we want to thank you once again for joining us here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza.
It was a pleasure. And any time you want me, just give me a holler.
Greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. And that's Tom Silverstein breaking down the Green Bay Packers, Rev, a team that you have your finger on the pulse. And, you know, you heard him say, Ted Thompson, you just don't know where he's going to go.
Well, you know, a team like the Green Bay Packers, they have the luxury of truly getting that best athlete out there because they are so loaded talent-wise on both sides of the ball. I mean, you take a look at some of those positions, and they're like two or three players deep at some of those spots. I mean, you know, the reason why I asked about Nick Barnett is because they do have two good inside linebackers already on the roster, even without Barnett on the team. So I think a guy like Thompson has the advantage of really picking and choosing, you know, between the best athletes available to him. And that's a sweet spot to be in if you're the Green Bay Packers.
All right, so we transition from a Super Bowl champion team, the Green Bay Packers, to where it all took place, the host, Dallas, who had some very super expectations heading into last season. And
don't they always?
none other to break down the Dallas Cowboys with us today. We have Jean-Jacques Taylor of the Dallas Morning News. Somebody we've been trying to catch up with for quite some time, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show today, JJ.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it, man.
All right, well, let's get into it because, you know, from the talk that everybody seems to be hearing is that, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are looking at a couple of Smiths there, Aldon Smith and Tyron Smith.
I don't know who said they're looking at Aldon. Who's, Who said they're looking at Aldon Smith? They aren't looking at him. Not at number nine.
Oh, really? Okay. So,
no, I mean,
so maybe
there's not a chance in the world they draft him at number nine.
Wow.
Not one.
Okay. So, maybe we're hearing conflicting reports. A lot of smoke signals sent out this time.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. There's not for him. You can get him at 15 or 16 or 17 without much, you know, consternation. If you look at Tyron Smith, I don't know that he's going to be there at that late in the first round, in the middle of the first round. And when you look at what they need, it doesn't really matter what Rob Ryan wants. If you can't keep Tony Romo upright and you can't get your offense to play better than it did last year, you can play as good a defense as you want, and you aren't going to win any games. Mark Colombo can't play right tackle anymore. Age and injury have really robbed him of the skill set that made him a pretty good player. Now, he's as tough as you want. He's as competitive as you want, but he can't do it anymore. They do not have a right tackle. They got to go get one.
Okay, so you think they will address tackle with that pick? Do you think there's any chance of them? We hear some talk also that Dallas is one of these teams that might be looking to trade down. How realistic of a scenario is that?
Well, that fits their MO. I mean, I think the hot rumor today was the Rams want to go up to get Julio Jones at number nine. And you could see some scenarios where Tyron Smith would be there at 14 at the Rams pick, or Anthony Castonanzo, I believe he's from Boston College, would be there. And, you know, Nate Solder's there if you want him. So if they have decided that there's really not much difference between Tyron Castonanzo and Nate Solder, and if we go to 14, we'll get one of those three and we'll be happy, then, yeah, you can see that. Jerry loves to play up and down the draft board and move here and there, show everybody how smart he is and how he can wheel and deal with the best of them. So trading down would not surprise me at all. I don't really think they're going up unless, you know, maybe if Patrick Peterson is there at number seven with San Francisco, they think that he's such a good player and such a talent and would be such a bargain at number seven that maybe they try to do something right there just because of his talent. And while they don't necessarily need a corner this year, Terrence Newman's obviously older, and you would love to be able to move him into the slot full-time or get rid of him in his $9 million salary next year.
Hey, JJ, I agree with you in terms of the need of that offensive tackle position. I mean, you could have all the skilled players in the world, but if your offensive line doesn't play up to a certain level, it's not going to matter as much. In my mock draft, I had them going with the kid out of BC, Castonzo. Do you think at all the fact that he's more experienced, a little older than Smith, will that play a role at all, or will they look more for going for the guy with a greater upside? I mean, you know, a win-now team, will that factor in at all?
I don't think so. I think, the experience thing is cool. It's obviously a small factor to me. But what you want when you're drafting in the top 10 is the best player and the best talent. And, you know, one of the problems is they've got a mismatched offensive line. They had Doug Free, who's a really athletic tackle, playing left tackle. They had Kyle Kozar, who's actually an athletic guard. Both of those guys could pull, make blocks in space. And then on the other side, they got Mark Colombo, who can't run faster than me, and got Leonard Davis, who can't run faster than you. And so they had a situation where they couldn't do a lot of things because one side of the offensive line was athletic and could move, the other side couldn't, and it didn't really mesh well. If they get Tyron Smith, they can use him at right tackle, which he played in college. Let him make some plays out there. Get the ability to make some plays in space, run screens to that side, run sweeps to that side. And then in a couple of years, if he's ready to be a left tackle, you can move Doug Free back. I mean, Doug Free started off as a right tackle. If you think his upside is better than Free's, you can move him back. So he gives them some flexibility. I think most people view Castonanzo as a right tackle pretty much long term.
Hey, JJ, Ralph Mancini here. You know, we do have a lot of Dallas Cowboy fans here in the New York tri-state area, and one of the things they want to know is, should they really be worried about Dez Bryant? I mean, even outside of all of his off-season transgressions that we all know about that have been reported upon already, I mean, this is a guy, even during the season, he needs somebody to chaperone him, to pick him up, and to take him to practice. each and every day. You know, and one of the reasons why I think a lot of fans worry about that also is because now the Cowboys might also be forced to hold on to a guy like Roy Williams just because of, you know, Des Bryant's questions regarding not only his health but also his demeanor and whether or not he could be a reliable guy on and off the field. What are your thoughts about Des Bryant?
I think Des is fine. I mean, Des is a guy from a as broken up a background as you could possibly have. And, you know, the thing about it is people say, oh, you can't use that as an excuse. And, you know, I grew up in a hard scrabble thing, and I turned out fine. Well, guess what, dude? Everybody doesn't react the same way to everything. And when your grandfather is your daddy, that's a messed up situation, okay? So, you know, I think he's you know, the thing about Des is nothing he does is criminal. Nothing he does has involved the authorities except for this thing with his pants sagging, which in the big picture is just a blip on the screen. He's a great football player. And, yeah, does he need to grow up? Yeah. Does he need to make some changes? Yeah. But do I think is Des a bad guy? No. And I've been around the Cowboys since 95, so I know a bad guy when I see one. And he's not a bad guy.
And there's been quite a few. To run through Big D. We're talking to John Jock Taylor of Dallas Morning News, spitting a lot of knowledge here about the Dallas Cowboys that we did not know about. Honored to have him on the show today. And, you know, I just want to follow up on that Des Bryant item. And, you know, for what it's worth, for the record, I think it's a steal still to this day where they took him in the draft and the return on investment still, you know, to be determined. But I think they're going to get great dividends out of that pick, even despite the off-field issues. But I guess the question that lies here is, you know, with everything that's transpired with Des Bryant in the past year, do you think that'll have any effect or impact on the Dallas Cowboys draft strategy? There's, you know, quite a few top prospects that do have carry that questionable character tag. Do you think the Dallas Cowboys will take that into consideration at all when they select this year?
Well, you know, I always tell people, let's be clear. There's a big difference between I'm late and I got questionable character. There's a big difference between, you know, I haven't reached an agreement, although he did reach agreement today on one of these lawsuits involving some jewelry, and I'm a thug. So, you know, there's just a difference between the two. Just like there's between somebody who beats up people, that's their character issue, and somebody's got a drug issue. And I think it's always clear to make sure that where guys are. Like, the Cowboys don't want anything to do with anybody with a drug issue. They just don't. And part of that's because of the disaster that was Quincy Carter and some other guys they've had run through the organization. So if you got a drug problem, they ain't really interested in you. If you got a maturity problem, well, then they think they can put you around some people that can help you solve that. You know, so Nick Fairley, I don't know that they're interested in him. Jason Garrett is a guy who wants motivated people who like playing football, as he would say, who have a real passion for the game and have a high motor. He's really not interested in taking somebody, especially with a high pick, that you have to convince them to play from time to time or they see fit to take plays off here or there. And so anybody who's got any issues like that, Cowboys aren't interested in. I would be shocked if Jimmy Smith's on that draft board because they don't like guys with drug issues. And you can say, oh, it's just some weed. Well, in their eyes, weed leads to other things. And you could be a weed head and just not be able to get it done. So I don't think they're interested in anybody with substance issues, no matter how small they are, if they're consistent. Now, everybody gets a mistake here and there, but if you got consistent issues in some way, shape, or form, and you can't pass drug tests, I don't think they're interested in those types of players.
Hey, we got one more before we let you go here. We've been talking about a lot of different stuff, but ultimately, doesn't it to some extent come down to one Tony Romo? And I was really, you know, intrigued by your column where you wrote about, is he too worried about whether teammates like him? Talk a little bit about Romo, and is he the man that can lead them, you know, back to the promised land?
Well, I don't think anybody knows that answer. I think we'll find out a lot more about it this year. Now he's started 61 games. Then the 6 year as a starter, the pass is over. It's time to deliver. I've always been kind of a Romo guy. I think he's got incredible talent. And in some respects, he's no different than Des in the sense that he has to mature as a player. And I think he's been doing that. I think he was headed that way. I don't think all the problems in the 1-4 start last year that he was a part of were all his fault. All of that set aside, yo, dog, it's time to win. And it's time to win now. This is still some talent on this team. I think Jason Garrett will be good for him. But, you know, I'm of the note that, and this is, to me, this is a bad year for quarterbacks. But if there was a guy there in the first three rounds, I'd go get him. And if there's not one this year, then I think they definitely need to go get one in the first three rounds next year, because Stephen McGee is just a guy. He's a third-string quarterback. John Kitner was terrific last year as the backup, but he's 38. You can't count on that every other year or every year after from here on out. They got to go get a real quarterback, one, to press Romo, and two, so that the season's not over if he gets hurt.
That's John Jack Taylor of the Dallas Morning News dropping knowledge on the Dallas Cowboys. Make sure you look him up also on Twitter, Jacques Taylor, and also on Facebook as well. John Jack Taylor, Dallas Morning News. Appreciate you coming on our show, and hopefully we can chat again sometime soon.
Always a pleasure, man. Take care.
All right. So John Jack Taylor from Dallas Morning News saying that the Aldon Smith interest is just a smokescreen that looks like they will be going in the offensive line direction. And, you know, you mentioned Tony Romo. I don't think he's the answer. And, you know, you already have some of his teammates questioning whether or not he is. Martellus Bennett coming out and saying that, you know.
Marty B.
Marty B. Maybe John Kitna should be the quarterback. Just real quickly here, Rev, your take on whether or not Tony Romo is the answer for the Dallas Cowboys.
I don't know if he's the answer, but, I don't think you can question whether or not he's really a starting quarterback going forward. I mean, John Kitna is 38 years old, and I don't think he's the answer. He's definitely not the answer. But maybe, you know, there's still a chance that Tony Romo is the answer. You know, ultimately, I think what I see out of Tony Romo is he does well in the regular season. He always puts up the numbers. But in the big games, he always makes the stupid mistakes. And I haven't seen him grow out of that. He makes ill-timed decisions. And if you don't make good decisions in the NFL, I don't know. I don't care how talented you are. You're just not going to succeed.
Yeah, and, you know, he'll be on a short leash this year because, you know, listen, John Kitna, Stephen McGee, I don't know if Dallas Cowboys use a draft pick on a quarterback this year. But I tell you what, if Tony Romo doesn't deliver this year, next year the Dallas Cowboys will be in the hunt for a quarterback, whether it be the draft, free agency, whatever. You know, him and Jason Garrett will both be heading the unemployment line. But, you know, enough Dallas Cowboys talk. We had Tom Silverstein earlier in the show, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We just had John Jock Taylor, Dallas Morning News. Make sure you check out those guys for more information on the Packers and Cowboys. Now it's time to start transitioning into some of our NFL Draft prospects here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza Bonanza with your hosts, Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini. And stepping up to the batter's plate here is Rashard Carmichael, the cornerback from Virginia Tech, you know, has a second or third round grade on the NFL Draft Bible Big Board, comes in at about 5'10", 190 pounds. Ran in the 4.50 range at the NFL Scouting Combine, and we are welcome to have him on the show. How you doing, Rashard?
Yes, sir. I'm doing all right, man.
Well, thanks for joining us, and I know you've had a hectic schedule here leading up to the NFL draft, just 13 days away now. You know, take us inside your head, your thought process as you prepare for the countdown. What's running through your mind right now, and what's the feeling around, you know, between talking with your agent and some of the feedback you're getting? Any teams that are showing significant interest in you, or are you just going with the flow at the moment?
Yes, sir. Well, like you said, man, it's been a long process going back to the Orange Bowl January 3rd of this year. I started training the next day, January 4th, right after that, all the way up into to the Senior Bowl, then to the Combine, then the Pro Day, and then, you know, then it breaks down to, you know, having individual workouts and things like that for different teams and, you know, going out and meeting and coaches and things like that. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, a busy time for everybody going through the whole process. And as for me, though, you know, a few teams been showing me, you know, some love, the Eagles, you know, the Steelers, Carolina, Tampa, the Texans, Redskins and Ravens, you know, a lot of the East Coast teams. I'm a Maryland guy, so, you know, they kind of keeping me close to home is what it's seeming like. But, you know, I'm hearing pretty good news, man. So, you know, I'm just waiting, like you say, the countdown and waiting on the name to be called.
Hey, Rashard, Ralph Mancini here. Talk about your Senior Bowl experience. I know that you came down with a high ankle sprain during that week leading up to the game, but you did get a chance to show off your quick feet to scouts and early practices. Do you think that was a key moment for you during that Senior Bowl week where you actually had a chance to showcase your talent?
Yes, sir. Senior Bowl was a great experience, man. You know, it was a lot of good guys, a lot of talent out there on the field together, getting to work together. And, you know, the scouts got to talk to you in the hotel and watch you a little bit on film and check you out in practice. So it was a good a way to get your name out there. And as for myself, you know, I made a few plays in the first couple of practices. So that definitely, you know, may have helped me out. You know, like you said, I came down with the high ankle, man. I had hurt it. I hurt my ankle like the last regular season game this past season. So, you know, like I said, I went straight to the ACC Championship, Orange Bowl, and in the training. So I never really got a chance to rest it. And I kind of tweaked it again that week of the Senior Bowl. So I wanted to, you know, try to take some time and try to get myself ready for the combine and the pro day, which, you know, the combine, I really wasn't, you know, all the way, you know, like myself, but you only live it once, man. So I you know, I had to go out there and just compete. But you know, I pulled in better times at my pro day. You know, numbers did a little bit better, so everything still worked out for me.
Hey, Rashard, this is Dan here, and you know, Virginia Tech. You know, it seems like every single year we have a Virginia Tech corner on the show talking about getting ready for the NFL draft, whether it's, you know, D'Angelo Hall or Flowers or Macho Harris. Talk a little bit about, you know, the legacy of the DBs at Va Tech and what is it like, you know, when you get there as a freshman learning from those veterans.
Yes, sir. Just the system here that Coach Beamer and, you know, on the defense that Coach Foster has, you know, you start off lining that field corner when you move into that boundary corner. And then, you know, that's the, you know, that main guy on the defense. You know, Coach Foster, before every game, he comes to me and say, you know, the boundary corner, man, for years, you know, if you can hold the boundary corner spot down, then, you know, we're going to win this game. You know, that's how we look at it here. And like you said, it's a lot of pride and a lot of tradition, you know, going back, you know, guys like, you know, I used to watch like Jimmy Williams and D Hall and, you know, Flowers, Macho. You know, you can keep naming guys all day from Virginia Tech, man. You know, we like to call it DBU, and, you know, we definitely want to try to keep that going.
Yeah, that's definitely like the rite of passage almost. You know, you break into the starting lineup as a field corner, you become the boundary guy when you're a senior. The other thing at Va Tech that everybody always talks about, obviously, is Beamer Ball, the special teams, and I know you've been a key contributor there. Talk about that a little bit and how you think that could help you as a rookie, you know, being able to step in and contribute as a special teamer as well.
Oh, yes, sir. Coming out of high school, you know, playing here at Tech, you know, Coach Beamer, he's real big on special teams. You know, you got to earn, you know, to earn your name, you know, you got to earn a spot on the special teams. You know, that show him, you know, if you really can play. And, you know, it kind of shows, you know, how athletic you are because, you know, you get to go out there and, you know, just run around for a play and, you know, try to block somebody or, you know, make a play. And, you know, Coach Beamer, you know, Beamer Ball, he believes special teams, you put the best players out there on the field. So, you know, everybody except for the quarterback, you know, you're going to be playing special teams here. So, you know, I definitely think that's going to, you know, prepare me for the next level, man. You know, they say that, you know, rookies got to, you know, do this and that on special teams. But, you know, I say that's what we do, man. That's Beamer Ball. So I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, Rashard, you're known as a physical guy with good speed and good range. What do you think is the most overlooked or undervalued part of your game?
I would say, man, my leadership skills, just because you really can't tell, you can't see it on the field, you know, that just coming at, through Virginia Tech, you know, I learned how to play with my brother, man, play within the defense. And, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, be that guy that, you know, kind of take control, not like a, you know, like a showboat or, you know, want to be out there at the coin toss or anything like that. But, you know, that guy that's, you know, keeping the chemistry on the field, you know, making sure the defense is calm, you know, after a penalty or a big play, you know, making the adjustments on the field, checking in and out of plays, in and out of defenses, you know, and things like that, that you need on the defensive side of the ball that you really can't tell by watching film. You know, you can talk to coaches and things like that to learn that about a person, but, you know, that's something, you know, that I like to do, you know. And, you know, Coach Foster and Coach Tony Gray, you know, they say if you're all right, you know, you're all wrong, as long as everybody do the same thing and on the same page, you know, we'll be all right on the defense. So, you know, I definitely believe in that. You need that to win on that side of the ball.
Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza, talking to Virginia Tech cornerback Rashard Carmichael, who we have pegged as a second or third round projection. Rashard, I got to ask you, you know, I'm looking here at our big board and I'm running through our list of the top 20 cornerbacks, and, you know, some scouts have brought into question your size and some might consider you undersized. What do you have to say to your naysayers out there?
You know, I played against some of the top receivers going into the draft this year and last year coming out of Georgia Tech. You know, the number one receiver selected, man, and he, you know, he had pretty good size. I had like 4 knockdowns and he had 1 catch on me, and he was the number one receiver drafted. You know, I played against Julio Jones, another big time receiver who, you know, really didn't, you know, make too many big time plays against his own. You know, and it's some more of the receivers out there that I think I held my own against, man. So, you know, if they're really watching the film, you know, I think they can see that and, you know, won't question my size. You know, 5'10", 192. You know, you look on a lot of rosters, that's the, you know, the about the size of the corners, man. The game changing to speed, hips, and quickness now, you know. So I think I'm going to be all right.
Hey, Rashard, you recently took part in ESPN the magazine's Kings for a Day feature, where you joined the likes of Colin Kaepernick and Stephen Ridley and others visiting New York City and Brooklyn as well. What was that like, and would you say that was the highlight of your offseason?
Yes, sir, man. That was a great experience, man. It was like the first vacation or break, I would say, that we had in a long time. And, you know, just being in a big city, man, and being around, you know, some other cool guys that you watch on TV, and you never really think that you would ever get a chance to link up. It felt good. Like, you know, we were taking a bunch of pictures, man. You know, I just got the magazine a couple days ago, man. So, you know, I texted everybody and called everybody, man, make sure everybody checked it out, you know, guys that were there with me. And then, like I said, it was just a great experience, man. Thank you, ESPN, for that.
All right, well, Rashard, we thank you for joining us here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza Show. We're looking forward to see which team you get selected to, and hopefully we can talk to you again sometime in the near future.
Yes, sir, man. Appreciate that.
All right, well, we appreciate you, sir, and that was Rashard Carmichael, Virginia Tech cornerback, definitely someone who's going to hear his name called early the following weekend. Get ahead of myself there, 13 days and counting to the 2011 NFL draft. And, you know, I'm getting excited. I know for me personally, it'll be my 10th year in a row covering the NFL draft at Radio City. Before then, it was at the Jacob Javits Center. Before then, Madison Square Garden. But it's always been right here in our own backyard, New York City, something magnetic, something special about this moment that these young men will have their name called. And a little bit of a different situation going down this year with the whole NFL lockout and labor situation. But you know what? I like to look at the good out of this. And you know what? Because the two sides are divided, it just means more NFL draft parties. Instead of just NFL Network and ESPN this year, we're going to get the uncertified NFLPA draft party here in New York City. And there's going to be quite a few prospects in town. But let's keep it moving here. NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza, Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini, the Reverend, preaching. some NFL draft as we count you down. 13 days and counting, and we just spoke to Rashard Carmichael from Virginia Tech. We got another defensive back joining us now. He is none other than DeAndre McDaniel of Clemson University. Another name here, defensive back of safety, someone that will also be hearing his name called early somewhere, probably in the second or third round, maybe even before them, possibly sneak into the latter part of the first round, coming in 6 foot, 213 pounds, ran a 4.6640 at the NFL Scouting Combine. DeAndre, welcome to the show, and I want to start right there in Indianapolis where you had quite an impressive performance and turned some heads. Tell us about that experience and what you took away from it. Any particular teams in particular show interest in you?
I pretty much met with every team there. Pretty much it was a great experience. Got to meet a lot of new players, got to see a lot of new faces. So, I mean, it was a great experience and meeting new people and getting to know how they see football and how they act toward football. So, I mean, just working with those guys, I mean, was basically just an honor.
Hey, DeAndre, Ralph Mancini here. You are known as one of the true students of the game in football circles with the way you watch film constantly. You led the ACC with 8 interceptions in your junior year by always being at the right place at the right time. And you've played 2 different positions. You played the rover position, and you also played strong safety. Where do you feel most comfortable, at strong safety or at free safety?
I feel comfortable at both. Because when I'm at free safety, I feel like I got enough range to cover the field. I feel like I can make plays back there, and I feel like if it's a running team, I could go to strong safety and play in the box. So, I mean, I just feel like I could do both.
Gotcha. And, you know, a good safety should be able to read offenses and anticipate. But beyond that, DeAndre, what other qualities should a premier safety possess? And what type of mentality should a premier safety have when he's out there on the field?
You just got to be aggressive, and you got to have knowledge of the game. I mean, you got to – film study plays a big role in football. And, I mean, going with your athletic ability, a lot of people try to just play off athletic ability when once you get a tip on the team and know what they're going to run with certain formations and stuff, I mean, that just helps you out so much. So, I mean – You pretty much got to be a leader out there, but you got to know what's going on so you can put people in the right position, including yourself.
Hey, DeAndre, this is Dan over here, and I'm just curious, you know, as we talked about, you're an all-around player. You can play in the box. You can play that deep center field. But I'm just curious, what really gets your blood going, what really gets you hyped up? Is it that big depleting hit, or is it, you know, snagging that interception and trying to turn defense into offense?
It's always the interception. I mean, I always give up the hit for the interception. I mean, you always want the ball in your hand. I mean, that's how you win games. You want to put the ball back in the offense hand and try to get them as many chances to score.
And I'm just curious, you know, you played a couple of the better quarterbacks in this draft the past season. You know, from a guy who's a cerebral player, I'd love to hear what your scouting report is on guys like Cam Newton and Christian Ponder who you played this past season.
My main thing is basically seeing if they eye down their receivers, like how they throw it, if they look them off or not. I look at their receivers and see what their receiver splits are. I look over the whole thing, what they're doing down the distance. I make sure I look over everything. But with quarterbacks like with Cam Newton, I seen that he kind of eyed down his receivers a lot, and that was a big tip for him.
That's interesting because I have my questions. Does Cam have the vision? Does he always see the safety? Does he always see DeAndre McDaniel there? And I know you guys came really, really close to pulling off that upset. You know, so you're saying maybe sometimes you could catch him where you could jump in front of that pass.
Right. I don't know about reading safeties. I mean, they pretty much was a running team. I don't know how well he played against other teams, really, but I don't feel he played that well against us. I mean, I think we pretty much had a lot of tips on him. It was early in the season. And I feel like he got better during the season because I had a lot more respect for him throughout the season. But against us, I don't think he did as well.
Hey, DeAndre, this is Ralph again. Now, personally, I think that you're the top safety in this draft, but does it irk you a little bit when you look at some scouting reports that describe you as being a finesse zone corner? Are you offended by that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm really offended by it. I mean, like I said, I feel like I always try to be the best at what I do, but I mean, with them saying I'm finesse, I mean, of course I'm offended because I know I'm an aggressive player, and when the light's on, that's when the best come out of me, and like all the people who scouts me and come back with that report, I mean, I feel like they just basically disrespecting my game. So I mean, I feel like I got a point to prove, and I mean, I don't really care where I get drafted. I just want to play football. So wherever I go, I got a point to prove.
All right, we're talking to DeAndre McDaniel, Clemson University, here on the NFL Draft Bible Digest. And, you know, I got to talk about the Clemson football program, DeAndre, because, you know, I'm looking at some of the players in this year's draft, Daquan Bowers, Chris Hairston, Jarvis Jenkins, Byron Maxwell, Marcus Gilchrist, Jamie Harper. I mean, the Clemson football roster was stacked. Some might say, or some have stated, that the Clemson football team maybe underachieved a little bit while you were there. Would you agree or disagree, and what would you say to that?
I say we underachieved. I know with the talent that we have, we're supposed to be contending for a BCS championship every year. I really don't know what it was. I mean, some of us just make mistakes sometimes, and I mean, it cost us in the long run. And I mean, like I say, I still feel like the Auburn game this year kind of made our season. That was kind of like the turning point because we knew we had a great team, great senior class, and we knew we had a lot of talent to compete for the BCS. But then after that game, I think everything just went downhill for us, and we couldn't get no breaks after that. So, I mean, I don't really know what it is that kind of caused us to lose games, but I mean, we got the talent at Clemson.
Yeah, that was definitely a tough Auburn loss, which we did talk about, overtime game. I think your quarterback there really had a tough time. He got injured and he tried to gut it out, Parker. You know, Rick brought up a lot of great talent on that team. You know, what do you think of Daquan Bowers and his chances? You know, he was playing in front of you most of the last three seasons. A lot of people talk about him as a top 10 pick. Give us your breakdown on his game.
Like you say, I mean, it speaks for itself. I mean, he's a top 10 pick. I mean, to me, he's that number one draft pick. I don't see how you could bypass him. I mean, he's a great player. He's hard-nosed, and he got the speed to come off the end, and he could give you another body at the three technique. I mean, he did it all for us. And, I mean, he's a great player, and, I mean, he goes in the film room, and he studies just as hard as anybody.
And what was the difference for him this past season? You know, he was very solid his first couple of years, but he really flourished this past year as a junior, particularly as a pass rusher. What do you think, from somebody that was in the locker room with him, what kind of helped him make that big boom this past year?
I feel like his freshman year, it was his freshman year. I mean, that's he just had a good season while we were playing the zone. Then I feel like the second year, a lot of people were still kind of getting acclimated to what defense we was running under Coach Steele, because we had a new defense come in, and I think that kind of slowed him up also, because it was a new system that he was learning after his freshman year. And then, I mean, he got everything up under his belt, and he came back his senior year. He knew the playbook, and he was ready to get after it. He could go after the ball and know what he's doing.
That is DeAndre McDaniel, Clemson University safety, another player that will hear his name called early during the weekend of April 28th, the 2011 NFL Draft. DeAndre, I want to thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule and joining us here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza. Hope to speak to you sometime soon in the near future. And if we don't speak to you before the draft, good luck.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's DeAndre McDaniel, Clemson University. The second defensive back we've spoken to already tonight, we had Rashard Carmichael on earlier, and Rev, you just heard DeAndre McDaniel talk about his game, and what do you take away from this young man?
I like him a lot, actually. You're talking about a guy with good ball skills. He's got huge hands. They're over 10 inches wide. I think his best quality is his ability to be at the right spot to make plays. He's got great instincts. He's a hard worker, as he mentioned, in the film room. He had a spectacular junior year, leading the ACC with 8 interceptions in 09 while recording 102 tackles. You know, some people question his ability to cover the entire field, but because he's only a 4'6 guy, but to me, he's a bright kid. He recognizes routes, and he's a reliable open field tackler as well.
And some people feel he could be the first safety off the board. And Dan, I actually just got a note handed to me here from my producer saying that we're going to have Raheem Moore on in the next hour, another safety that might be competing for that top safety off the draft board. Let me ask you, since we just spoke to DeAndre, we'll have Raheem on later on in the show. If you were an NFL GM and you had to choose between the two, which player would you choose to command your defense?
I'd probably lean towards Raheem Moore myself at this point, but I think a lot of that, too, might be what kind of safety you're looking for, what kind of defensive backfield you already have. You're talking about guys with some different strengths. I mean, Raheem Moore is the best center field type safety. He's somebody we had on the DB show, a couple Saturdays ago, kid that played baseball. He said he actually was a center fielder, and people said, hey, man, you look like you should be running out there grabbing footballs, and that's how he kind of became a safety a little bit. You know, so I think a lot of it might be just style of what you're looking for, but he's definitely, I think, in today's NFL, I think it really helps if you can have a safety that can be a corner-type player, that can be a really strong against the pass. I mean, let's be honest, that's what most of these teams out there are doing. Look at the teams that made the Super Bowl. They're teams that were able to effectively throw the ball. You need to stop that if you want to advance, and I think Moore is the guy that has those ball skills to really kind of put a hitch in that passing game.
Now, personally, I like DeAndre McDaniel just because of his versatility as well. As we just mentioned, he played both strong safety and free safety. And, you know, it's no coincidence that this guy was always in position to make plays, to make those interceptions. He's a hard worker. You know that he takes the game of football very seriously. And to me, if I compare him to Moore a little bit, I think it's a little bit more physical. I know that it's a passing league right now, and it's about covering receivers. But I also want my safeties to be physical, and I think that he's a little bit more physical than Raheem Moore, and that's why I think I would take McDaniel over Moore.
And, you know, DeAndre McDaniel, when you go back to the preseason rankings that, you know, we get a chance to look at, you know, between the Blesto and the National, they both, you know, consensus. DeAndre McDaniel was the top safety coming into the season, and somewhere along the way or throughout the season, his stock kind of slipped. I mean, you know, coming into the year, a lot of people thought he would be a first-round pick, maybe his stock slipping a little bit, but definitely some debate to see which safety will be the first one off the draft board. I know Denver Broncos picking at the top of round two definitely have a need there. We might see Raheem Moore or DeAndre McDaniel come off the board at the top of the second round.
Or the Dallas Cowboys.
Or the Dallas Cowboys, another team that, you know, safety has been a need there, it seems, for quite some time. They
drafted Roy Williams with the top 10 pick, right? I mean, they're still looking for somebody who can man that last line. I just wanted to throw out there, too, that I looked it up. I thought he did. McDaniel did actually pick off Newton in that game. Newton did have two picks, and DeAndre did have one in that game. So he did snag one from the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's something that we've talked about a lot internally here about the Cam Newton-Auburn style of offense. You know, if you go back and watch how many reads did exactly Cam Newton make, you know, out of that shotgun formation. Rev, I'm talking about, you know, he's in the shotgun, he fakes a handoff, he makes one read. If the receiver's open, he throws it. If not, he runs it. You know, we just heard DeAndre McDaniel kind of hint at those same things, and Dan just said, you know, he even picked them off in that game. Sounds a little bit troublesome if you're going to be using the number one overall pick on him.
Well, you just asked, how many reads does he make? And the answer is one. He makes one read, and if it's not open, if it's not there, he just goes.
Is it one and run?
It's a simple offense. And, you know, that's where, you know, he becomes a bit of a project. Cam Newton, he's the ultimate boomer bust guy because, you know, yeah, we know the athletic skills he brings to the table, but it's more than that in the NFL because everybody's fast in the NFL. Everybody's good. Everybody's powerful. So you got to be able to deceive guys. You got to be able to look guys off, look safeties off. And when I see a guy like, for instance, Christian Ponder look off safeties, I don't see Cam Newton do the same thing. So it's also a mental game at the next level. It's not just being the biggest, most physical and strongest and fastest guy out there. The quarterback has to be a smart guy, and he has to know what he's looking at.
NFL Draft Bible extravaganza bonanza. We are halfway through part one. 60 more minutes to go right here. Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini talking NFL Draft. Got a chance to talk to Tom Silverstein at the top of the show, addressing the Green Bay Packers draft needs. Also spoke to John Jock Taylor, Dallas Morning News. You just heard DeAndre McDaniel, the safety out of Clemson. Before him, we had Rashard Carmichael from Virginia Tech, the cornerback. And we're going to be talking to a couple other prospects later in the show, Raheem Moore from UCLA, Quentin Carter from Oklahoma. And then last half hour of the show, we are going to have the NFL Alumni Association Director, very special guest, George Martin, talking about the current labor situation, what it all means to the incoming NFL Draft rookie class of 2011. A couple of wrinkles in the proposed rookie wage scale that you might not know about. We'll talk to him about that and more. First, I want to welcome back Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini, the Reverend, to the show here with Rick Saratella talking NFL draft. And, you know, we were talking about Cam Newton there. And a lot of people talking whether or not that second quarterback, Blaine Gabbert, will be off the board. Some people have him pegged number five. Whether that is the Arizona Cardinals or not, Rev, remains to be seen. Lots of talk heating up that the Washington Redskins looking to make a play for a potential quarterback. Quickly here, before we move on to our next guest, can you see Gabbert as well as Newton both going in the top five?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, with Newton, it's just the upside that people are going to be intrigued with. And with Blaine Gabbert, though, I think Blaine Gabbert has even more upside than Cam Newton. You're talking about a kid who's a hard worker. He's got the size, and he has got the work ethic to get better. You take a look throughout his history, throughout the years, he's a kid who worked hard throughout, trained himself to be a type of quarterback that can be a franchise quarterback, makes all the throws that you want. So I could see more than a few teams going up for Gabbert. As you noted, the Washington Redskins, I could see them definitely trading up. And maybe even a team like the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, I know for a fact that Minnesota is going to not only target one, they're probably going to target two quarterbacks in this draft. And they've been bringing in everybody to work out for them. So it should be very interesting. But to answer your question, yeah, I can definitely see Cam Newton and Gabbert both going in the top five.
All right. Well, you just heard Clemson safety DeAndre McDaniel just a second ago talk about some of Cam Newton's flaws when he played against Auburn, potential first-round quarterback. And when you talk about the first round, our next guest is knocking on the door, and that would be another safety from UCLA. That would be none other than Raheem Moore. You know, again, maybe the end of the first round, top of the second round, but another big play safety here coming in at just under 6 feet, 205, ran a 4.62 at Indianapolis. But Dan, maybe more impressive is, you know, his 20-yard shuttle and three-cone drill was faster than just about any safety at the combine, and that speaks tremendous amounts to his athleticism.
Yeah, I love those shuttle times. I mean, that's more important than that 40-yard dash. I mean, we can ask Raheem when he comes on, you know, how often do you ever run 40 yards straight on the field? I don't think it's very often. You're going to have to change directions a lot. You're going to have to cut. You have the fluidity in the hips, and he's got it. That's why I think he's the best safety in this draft, definitely the best cover safety.
Well, let's ask the man himself because we have Raheem Moore on the line, the UCLA safety. Welcome to the show, Raheem. Thanks for joining us on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza. And, you know, what was the reaction that you got from NFL teams when they saw those times? Your stop and start go ability definitely helps you out immensely playing in the secondary, going up against skill positions such as wide receivers who can cut on a dime. Talk about how that agility helps you and what was the feedback that you got in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine.
Yeah, first I want to say, yeah, thank you guys for having me. But, yeah, as far as my changing of my direction and being able to stop and cut on a dime, man, that's pretty much been my bread and butter, you know, throughout my whole life playing football so far. And, you know, if you look at football players and, you know, what sports is all about, especially football, that's what the game is about. It's not about running straight forward. It's about changing directions, knowing how to break a guy down, how to tackle, how to make plays on a ball. Because nobody's ever going to sit right there and just run straight 40 yards. You know, the game is 22 players on the field, and nobody's going to let you just run straight. But, you know, the coaches, they love my change of direction. You know, they say I have a lot of corner skills, and that's one thing I thrive on. You know, my whole mentality is that when you're a free safety, you should be able to play like a strong safety and have corner skills. You get what I'm saying? And I mentioned you guys saying DeAndre McDaniel was on there. Was just on here, and, you know, he's the type of guy, you know, who you know, was a great safety as well, who makes big-time plays. And you know, that's what it's all about, changing directions and moving around, because that makes that – it's all about getting from point A to point B. And you can do that and also have the film study and a great preparation and a great conditioning, that makes you overall a great player.
Hey, Raheem, this is Dan, man. Glad to have you on again. I know we had you on a couple weeks ago, and you said, hey, not to be cocky, but there's not 32 players better than me. Been a couple weeks. Have you been doing your research? Have you found 32 better than you yet?
No, not at all, Dan. You know, and I'm not trying to sound boastful or anything, but I just feel like a lot of people don't really respect me. You know, I just feel like the things I've done, it speaks for itself. You know, I may not went to the most sexiest school, but, you know, you have to give credit where credit's due. And don't get me wrong, there's some great players out there. You know, I even feel like there's other players that, you know, that need to be mentioned as a top 32 player. You know, like guys like DeAndre McDaniel and, you know, Daniel Thomas, you know, Ryan Williams, you know, those guys I know. And, you know, like I said, I don't feel like there's 32 guys better than me, you know. And but, you know, it's not about where you get drafted. It's about what you do when you get there, you know. So, you know, we'll see how everybody turn out, you know, when toward the end of our careers.
You talk about, you know, being underestimated a little in yourself. How about the safety position in general? A lot of times when it comes draft week, the safety position in itself doesn't seem to get a lot of respect. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's funny because everybody looks for the most, you know, flashiest people on the field. But if people know football and know defense, defense win championships. And when you have the safeties, it's the most important position on the field because they're the last line of defense. So if you have a stud back there who won't let anything get behind them, then that makes your team that much better. The teams are so skeptical on drafting safeties. But look at when the draft when Ed Reed was number 24, you know, and Roy Williams was the first. Not knocking Roy Williams. I really love the guy. He's a great player. But, you know, Ed Reed's the best safety in college, in the NFL right now. I wish I know a lot of teams wish that they would have drafted Ed Reed probably top five. You know, and it's funny how people underestimate the safety position, but if you look at all the great defenses in football, they have great safeties. Baltimore Ravens, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers, Ed Reed, you know, the Patriots, Brandon Mayweather, you know, so on and so on. So, and those are the big-time playmakers. And, you know, safety, I look at, you know, people underestimate safety, but, you know, I feel like every position is important, every position.
Hey, Raheem, Ralph Mancini here. It's good to have you back on the show again. When we had DeAndre on just a few moments ago, when we asked him, you know, how he stacks up versus a lot of the other safeties in this draft, he mentioned the fact that he is a student of the game, a guy that watches a lot of film. Talk to us about, you know, your study habits and, you know, what you do to prepare yourself for a game. Talk a little bit about the mental side of the game and what you do to prepare yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, preparation is the key, you know, and the thing about film study, when you can put yourself in a position to make a play before the play even starts, that makes you great. You know, that makes you stand out. That makes you more of an impact on the game. You know, my deal is, you know, Sinkers, okay, you know, we're in a road game. I always watch the team I'm playing against. I always watch their film on the plane. You know, I want to keep everything fresh in my memory. I want it to be about route recognition, run plays. And so on my way back from that game, win or loss, I'm popping in the next week's film. You know, when I get back on Monday, I go in, I get two DVD clips. I watch run and pass the whole game. So I want to be able to see what a team likes to do when they're backed up, when they had a plus 50, the red, the fringe, the black zone, the red zone. So when I'm in a game, I can say, okay, hey, this team right here likes to run a lot of slants in the red zone, okay? If we run some man blitzes or we run some man free, you know, I want to be able to play inside shape and jump this slant because that's all I've seen on film. You know, little things like that. And also, you know, I used to round my troops up, and every Thursday we used to watch the top five main concepts of offense. And it's funny how when you watch those plays and you get them ingrained in your head and you go through scout team and practice, it makes the game that much easier. And it's funny how, you know, there's times where I'm on the field and our whole secondary will communicate, hey, they're going to run China 7 or they're going to run double post or they're going to run straight vert routes. And that same play would exactly happen. And it shows you how much it pay off. And also, you know, I don't only just watch film throughout the season. I study guys in the offseason. You know, I was studying Washington and USC and those teams throughout the offseason. So when that time came, I knew exactly what they had to do. You know what I'm saying? And that's how you know, my secondary and I were able to make plays.
NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza. Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini, joined by UCLA free safety Raheem Moore. And, you know, you're breaking down the film that you put in, all the work you put into film study, and you mentioned Washington, so I must ask, because you played Jake Locker so many times in your career, Raheem, you know, when you were lining up on the other side of the ball, did you feel like you were playing against a first-round type of quarterback? Was there, you know, a special presence about him on the field? How was it matching up against Jake Locker? There's a lot of debate out there whether or not he is or isn't a first-round quarterback. What's your take?
You know, personally, I feel like he is in certain ways. You know, one thing I look for in a quarterback is his decision-making. And, you know, not everybody's perfect, but Jake Locker, he has the, you know, sometimes he makes good decisions, sometimes he makes bad decisions. And, you know, I love his athleticism. He's the type of guy where he's pretty much a quarterback with a running back mentality. He'll run you over. He'll outrun you. And, you know, he's so polished at what he does. The only thing I knock about Jake Locker is that he telegraphs his throws a lot. And I think that's very important as a quarterback that you shouldn't do. That's the only thing I think bad about him. Other than that, he can throw. He can make those NFL-type throws, those deep comebacks, those deep digs. You know, he's a guy who's real good at play action. You know, he's a guy that takes control of the offense, and he knows what to do in certain situations. So I believe that he's a first-round talent, you know. But whoever gets him, they're getting a great guy who's a leader. He's a captain. And, you know, he's a guy who takes care of his business on and off the field. And but as far as his telegraphing his throws and, you know, staring the receivers down a little too much sometimes, is the only thing I have on him. And, you know, a lot of people might not understand that because they might not watch film or really study the guy to the T. But when I play against Jake Locker, I will watch him every snap. I will watch him every move. So when the Saturdays came, it was like he was pretty much my teammate.
All right, well, there you go. We're getting the inside scoop here from UCLA safety Raheem Moore. You know, you want to learn about the quarterback, ask the opposing free safety. You know, what's interesting, Raheem, is a team that I think has you on their radar, the Denver Broncos Vice President of Operations, John Elway. You know, he was asked by a reporter, well, I guess you feel like your strong point is evaluating the quarterback position. And he said, no, quite honestly, I feel like my strong suit is evaluating the secondary, the defensive backs, because as a quarterback, that's what he studied, that's what he watched on film. And just
right,
a reverse perspective here, you know, you're giving us the perspective from a free safety standpoint. Definitely some inside knowledge here. You know, so many so-called draft gurus and experts that try to pretend like they know it all. I don't know who that could possibly be.
You're talking about me, right?
But, you know, some very good perspective here from Raheem Moore. And, you know, 10 interceptions in 2009, just one interception a season ago. Why do you think that is, Raheem?
You know what it was? Man, a lot of teams stayed away from me. You know, it was some games where I would get frustrated. You know, some teams just wouldn't throw my way at all. I remember versus Kansas State the first game of the season. I mean, I can count on my hand on how many times he threw the ball. And the times where they would throw the ball, either I'd be in a box or if I'm on one side of the field, they'd throw to the opposite side of the field. And, you know, it's you know, when teams – You know, it seems like when teams understand what type of impact you have, they study you more than you ever thought. And I knew coming to this my junior season it would happen. And a lot of times is, you know, I made other plays. I made more tackles than I did, more TFL. So I was making plays all around. And, you know, I showed that I could be an overall football player. And I didn't focus on trying to, you know, redo my stats because that's where you mess up. And all I did was focus on I wanted to win, man. And, you know, we had problems stopping the run. And I wanted to do all I can to get in the run game. And sometimes I did fall short where I was getting my keys a little too not good enough. And I was baiting, doing a little too much and trying to make a play when I should have let the game come to me like I normally do. And, you know, I fell short. But, you know, it was tough this past year because, like I said, you know, a lot of teams were thrown my way. And it, you know, it kind of forces you to want to make a play, but it's like you can only do so much, you know. But if you look at the film and you realize how I'm in more man-to-man coverage and how I'm coming up being physical in a run game or I'm just showing my overall passion for the game, you realize, you know, what the difference is, you know.
All right, well, you know, we definitely appreciate you joining us here on the NFL Draft 5 Extravaganza. That's Raheem Moore, UCLA free safety. Definitely a name to look out for in the first round of the 2011 NFL Draft coming up here on April 28th. Raheem, if we don't speak to you before the draft, good luck. We'll be keeping tabs, and hopefully we can touch base somewhere after.
Thank you, man. You know, it's funny. I've never been this nervous in my life. I mean, in my life, because, I mean, it's going to be a crazy sight to see. But I'll be in New York, and like I said, I'll be nervous, but I can't wait to see where I'm going, man.
Well, what are you going to be doing for the draft day?
I'll be in New York.
Are you going to be at the Radio City or the NFLPA, or are you going to make an appearance at both of them?
I'll be in Radio City in the green room, but I'm still here to support, you know, the NFL and support the players at the same time, you know. So, you know, I'm all in it to win it.
All right. So hey, when you're in New York, you have our number. I know you got a busy schedule. Maybe we can link up. But hey, we wish you all the best, Raheem Moore, UCLA safety, and we'll be talking soon, my man.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. God bless, man.
All right, there you have it. So, you know, some interesting tidbits coming from these defensive backs, guys. I mean, you know, you just heard Raheem say, you know, Jake Locker tends to telegraph his passes. And before that, DeAndre McDaniel, you know, Cam Newton didn't really make very many reads, as evidenced by the interception or two that he had off of him. You know, we spent a minute or two on DeAndre McDaniel earlier. What's your take on Raheem Moore, Rev, first-round pick, yes or no?
I think there's a possibility of him possibly sneaking into the late first round because there are a lot of teams out there that are looking for a safety that could also, you know, be that type of cover guy that could also maybe even play over a slot receiver that can go back there and kind of act like a Merton Hanks type where he could just track the ball and read that quarterback. And, you know, from the sound of things, you know, both with DeAndre and Raheem, both of these guys are very intelligent guys. Both of them work very hard, and both of them pick up on those tendencies. And it's not just the athletic ability that makes you a great free safety. It's the ability to dissect the game, to see what those tendencies are, and to act upon them. And that's what I think both of these players have.
Yeah, we had that was Raheem Moore. We had DeAndre McDaniel. Earlier in the show, we had Rashard Carmichael, and then also we had a chance to talk to John Jock Taylor, the Dallas Morning News, Tom Silverstein, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, same time, same place, All Access Football right here on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be bringing you the NFL Draft 5 Extravaganza Part 2. Bonanza, Reverend. I know you're going to be popping your collar fresh out of church, getting ready after your midnight mass. And, you know, we're going to break it down here on NFLDraftBible.com. Go there for all the latest news and information. Our good friend here, Daniel Moglione, just posted his latest mock round draft. And speaking of top flight safeties, we talked to a couple of them. They're going to come off the draft board early, maybe in the first round. DeAndre McDaniel, Raheem Moore, Also, another player from the University of Oklahoma, Quentin Carter, has many teams intrigued. Dan, what's your take on Quentin Carter?
Well, I think Quentin, you know, he's definitely somebody that was very productive the last couple of years at Oklahoma, showed he's got the ability to snag the football. And I think a big plus with him is the ability to play either safety position, whether it's free or strong safety. So I think that versatility is a big boom moving forward. I mean, whether it be, you know, is a team looking for either position that opens you up more to more teams, and also that versatility, teams like that. They like to move their DBs around a lot. So if he can do both things, I think that only helps him moving forward.
All right. Well, you know, let's break down some more of these prospects, and we transition from one prospect to another. Next on, we actually have Quentin Carter on the phone of Oklahoma, as a matter of fact. And, you know, we want to welcome him to the show. You know, Quentin, thanks for joining us. Some of our previous guests matched up, faced some top quarterbacks throughout their career. You actually had the privilege of practicing against one of the top NFL starting quarterbacks now in Sam Bradford. Before we get into this whole draft process and where you are and everything like that, let's just talk a little bit about playing against such a top caliber player day in and day out in practice. I just want to ask you, you know, what did you take away from practicing against Sam Bradford every day, and how much of a better player did that make you?
Well, I mean, starting off practicing against Sam, it was like a game every single day. Then you had all these great players surrounding him on that offense as well. I mean, it was a stretch of about five or six games where, you know, it was about 30 points on the board in the first quarter. So just going out there, you know, learning the way like a smart quarterback thinks and how he reads through his progress, and just knowing that you have to, you know, stay on your P's and Q's at all moments at practice, it just gets you prepared for the games.
Hey, Q, a lot of fans know you from the big hits you've administered on guys like Jeremy Maclin and other guys in the Big 12. But what not enough people talk about is your versatility. As Dan just mentioned before, you know, you lined up at strong safety. You lined up at free safety under Bob Stoops. Tell us about that versatility that you offer NFL teams.
Well, I mean, you know, I always did what was best for our defense as a game plan, and that was like jumping back and forth from free, strong safety, depending on who we were playing and their scheme or their offense. So, I mean, it really helped me out tremendously, because you had games where I would be spinning down on slot receivers all game, or, you know, playing a cover four or halves, or even playing center field. So, I mean, I was all over the field just depending on the game plan of some teams, and it just makes me more versatile player for teams to see that I can do more, play either position, so that'll make them want to take me.
Hey, Quentin, this is Dan here, and I'm just curious. You know, we talk a lot about this and your versatility in the two different positions. What are the different skill sets that you need to play free compared to strong? You know, what changes in what you're looking on the play when you're playing the different positions?
Well, I guess it depends on the scheme of the defense, whether you're spinning down to be in a run fit or you're playing center field. But, you know, playing free, you want to be rangy, good ball skills, being able to read underneath keys so you could help in the run fit if needed. And, like I said, being able to be rangy and cover the field, and also having a speed or a technique to cover a slot receiver. And strong safety, you know, more physical. Both safety, to me, being physical, I mean, I never had a true definition of what a free safety was or what exactly a strong safety was, because, like I said, at Oklahoma, like I said, I played both. So, you know, you had to be rangy, had to be physical, had to show up in a run fit, and had to play cover two. So all the different things you do at both safeties, I had to do them every day. And, you know, to me it was just a safety. It was no strong safety or free safety. It was just playing safety. So whatever I'm asked to do, I'll do that. And whatever they want to call it, you call it whatever you want.
Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza Show, joined by Oklahoma safety Quentin Carter. And, Quentin, you talk about being able to play both strong and free safety. Two-part question. One, do you have a preference which position you play? And secondly, have any NFL teams expressed interest in one position over the other?
Well, I mean, I don't want to throw out a vague answer, but you know, it really doesn't matter which one I play. I think, like I said, both you have to be physical. Both you get to cover receivers and man-to-man and be in deep positions where you're playing center field and halves. So, I mean, I can't pick one. I mean, I just play ball, like I said. And that teams, they haven't said, oh, we want you to play free safety or we want you to play strong safety. But, you know, I've been talking to teams that are in need of free safeties and strong safety. So that just tells me that there are teams that know I'm versatile. They're willing to take me to play strong or free.
And, you know, we all know about your charitable endeavors off the field and working with children through your Soul Foundation. But give us an idea also of the type of leadership skills that you exerted on the field and in the locker room in Norman, Oklahoma.
Well, I mean, I just basically lead by example. A lot of younger guys just follow after me. They try to do what I do, even on and off the field, you know, and it starts on the field, just getting that respect from your teammates in the locker room and setting up extra film hours and extra hours to do field work in the summertime and in the off season. And all the younger guys see that, or even the guys your age see that on the team, and they follow up behind you because they want to be good players, just like you're striving to be a good player. And it's just like a cancer that spreads around. Once you're doing the right thing, everybody behind you follows you, and they do the right thing.
Oh, okay, and I guess as an add-on, I'd like to ask, what type of character, from a character standpoint, what are you offering an NFL team when you walk into that locker room? What type of person, what type of personality are you going to offer an NFL team?
Well, I mean, I'm a positive person. I work hard. Coming to make the team better. I mean, I'll be selfless. I don't have to worry about me getting in trouble off the field. Like I said, I'm coming to work every day and make the team better and do whatever I'm asked to do. I mean, a coach wants a player that's able to be coached and that's going to show up on the field and make plays. You don't have to worry about them getting in trouble off the field and also being a strong fixture in the community, and I'll do all of that.
Hey, Q, you know, throughout the show, we talked a lot about what a quarterback, understanding what a defensive back can do and a defensive back understanding what a quarterback can do. Well, you played quarterback in high school, so can you tell us, you know, how did that help you transition to being a safety?
It's just knowing anticipation, knowing when the quarterback wants to get the receiver the ball, the progression of his you know, the plays, whether he's trying to go to the short side of the field on a quick game or going through progression to a deep pass or play action, and knowing how to read the under keys, knowing what the offensive line will do, because they'll let you know what the quarterback is doing before he does it. So, I mean, being on that offensive side of the ball, it helped me out tremendously.
And also, you know, we asked the previous guest, we asked McDaniel about playing against Cam Newton. We asked Raheem Moore about playing Jake Locker. This past year you played against Blaine Gabbert, who a lot of people project as a top 10 guy, maybe top 5 guy. Can you give us a scouting report on him, you know, from an opponent's perspective?
Yeah, well, starting off opponent's perspective, I mean, no, they did a lot of screen passes, a lot of short passes, slant type of stuff. Never really got any deep balls from them at all, so we were down there playing man-to-man and cover four a whole lot, just trying to take away that quick game and have a safety and a run fit. So, I mean, just knowing that coming in, we knew we wouldn't get any deep passes from him. We didn't even see on tape if he was a could throw the ball that far in the deep coverage. A couple games we watched, they had a couple fade routes or whatnot, but nothing that would alarm you. So, I mean, you know, he goes through his reads or whatnot, but I think they get most of the calls from the sideline. So we know we could disguise and give a disguise. We know they're going to check with the sideline. Then we get into our defensive call that we're going to be playing. So we know most of the time they might just play into our hand with some of our defensive calls, the way we're disguising it. So that works pretty well.
That is Quentin Hard-Hitting Carter from the University of Oklahoma. Safety, I want to thank you for spending a few minutes with us, Quentin, and good luck to you with the NFL draft this April 28th. We'll definitely be keeping tabs on you. Maybe we could touch base somewhere afterwards, but we definitely wish the best for you. And thanks again for joining us here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza Show.
All right, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys again, too.
Absolutely. And next time we talk to Quentin, he will hopefully know what team he is a member of, and hopefully we'll get all these guys back. Very defensive back laden show tonight. Next week when we do the extravaganza part two, we'll add a little diversity to the show.
It turned out somehow DB show part two almost.
Yeah,
right?
Almost. But you know what? We got a lot of,
so many of them,
Well, we got a lot of good perspective and inside scoops. I mean,
top three quarterbacks, right? Top three or four quarterbacks in this draft from a lot of people's estimation. Not necessarily the most glowing scouting reports
exposed
on any of them,
Exposed right here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza. And we'll be doing this same time, same place, next Friday, right here on All Access Football, here on the Blog Talk Radio. And, our next guest coming up, George Martin, former Super Bowl champion of the New York Giants, current NFL Alumni Association director. Unfortunately this year, Rev, we have the whole NFL lockout looming over our heads. So it's another factor to take into the equation here. And, a lot of discussion about the whole rookie wage scale and how that might impact the draft. Do you think that maybe teams, maybe more specifically the Carolina Panthers, will be looking to trade out of that number one slot because of the rookie wage scale that might be imposed with the new CBA agreement?
Well, yeah, I think that first pick becomes a lot more desirable for teams out there because of that rookie wage scale, where they won't have to spend as much money on that first overall pick. But when you talk about specifically a team like the Carolina Panthers, I think they should just trade down because they have so many needs. I mean, you take a look at that team up and down that roster. I mean, they could use reinforcements at just about any position there. And so I think that the best thing for them to do is to trade down and get themselves some extra picks, because let me tell you something, whether you talk about Cam Newton or Blaine Gabbert or whoever you want to talk about, there are no saviors out there for this team. One player is not going to come to this team and turn it into a playoff contender.
Well, Rev, I will say this to Rick's point. I think this does make it more likely to see those guys go number one overall, or to see two of them go in the top five, because let's be honest, if you don't have to give a Cam Newton, a $70 million contract with a $40 million guaranteed money, you are more likely to take that risk because the financial risk isn't as big. It's not going to, if he does turn into a bust, it's not going to, completely destroy your salary cap. I mean, think about it. The Jets paid Mark Sanchez $10 million a year, his rookie year. He struggled. They got into the playoffs, but that's a lot of money for a rookie who's unproven. If you only have to pay him a couple million, that does minimize your risk.
However, I see your point. But, you take a look at the general manager, Marty Herney. He's not a guy that just came to the team. I don't know if he has two or three more drafts to go through before a team becomes a quality playoff contender. This guy's been at it for 10 years right now. He can't afford to waste any draft picks. I mean, last year, you take a look at what he did. He brought in Jimmy Clausen, who was a certified bust. Does he want to risk going through the same thing once again by bringing in perhaps the biggest boomer bust guy in this draft in Cam Newton? I mean, his job is on the line here. If he screws this up, I think he's going to be out of a job.
I just mean more from a financial perspective. Maybe this makes it more likely that they can find a trading partner. because
I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
Well, guys, it's not just the first overall pick, but, you know, if you just look at last year, for example, the top 10 picks, they make anywhere between $20 to $50 million guaranteed, which is a very heavy financial commitment to invest in a player that has yet to even step onto an NFL field. And, you know, I think that's one of the key sticking points here in the NFL labor negotiations with the whole rookie wage scale. And, you know, we're going to talk more about that. And to do that, we have a very special guest tonight, the man of the hour, I must say, the current NFL Alumni Association Director, Mr. George Martin. I want to welcome him to the show. How are you doing tonight, George?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Thanks for joining us tonight. And, you know, before we talk about the current labor situation, maybe for some of our younger listeners, I hate to date you here, but, you know, this is an NFL draft show, and something that we always talk about are the NFL draft sleepers, they like to call them. And, you know, back in 1975, you want to talk about a sleeper, 262nd pick overall in the 11th round. They don't even have 11 rounds anymore, but just take us back to your whole experience being selected by the New York Giants.
Well, first of all, it was a very exciting time. I can recall that because there's a lot of speculation. And as a young athlete coming into the league, you don't know if you're going to go in the first round or at that time the 14th round. You don't know where you're going to go. So you keep your fingers crossed. You've got your agent there who's you know, keeping you positive, and your family is there all supportive of you. It's a time that you never forget. It's really one of those milestone events that you'll always remember. But the most important thing is that you have the opportunity to get into a training camp. You see the things move at a much faster pace. The athletes are just exponentially faster and better. And you realize from the very first moment that you're in a league that is truly a professional league.
Hey George, this is Dan here. I'm just curious, you know, as we talk about reminiscing when you were drafted, how different is today's draft? I mean, could you have ever imagined back then that we'd be talking about a three-day primetime event and just the way the scouting combine is covered? I'm sure when you were working out, there weren't, you know, tons of TV cameras anywhere with media people all over the place. I mean, it's really become an event in itself.
I still have a hard time figuring out the allure of it even now, as a matter of fact. I mean, the only camera that was around when I was working out was one that was held by my younger brother, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, it is, it's exciting to see. It's phenomenal to see how it has morphed into a marquee event. And the excitement it really permeates the entire industry. And you can empathize with those young athletes who are sitting there on pins and needles and very anxious to see that their college career culminates with them being announced by the commissioner and then walking across the stage and being acknowledged as one of the proud members of the NFL. So I am just delighted to see how this entire industry has really taken quantum leaps, and it's nice to have been a part of it, even though, as you say, I'm dating myself going back to 1975.
Rick Saratella, Daniel Moglione, Ralph Mancini, joined by Mr. George Martin, 1988 Super Bowl champion here with the New York Giants. We're based here in New York City. We know the story well. And, you know, again, 11th round pick, 262nd overall. They don't have that anymore, but we know how the story goes. 96 career sacks. You know, I would love to sit here and talk some Giants football with you, but, you know, as the NFL Alumni Association Director, you are very active in the current negotiations, the labor agreement. You know, George, I got to be honest, you know, I saw a report today that the two sides were serious about negotiations. I mean, were they not serious before? What's the latest and the greatest? We hear now they're going to take the weekend off from negotiating. Why the pause, and what's the current state of the union here with the whole negotiation?
Well, first of all, insofar as the NFL alumni, we are not part and parcel of the negotiations because, as you know, that any labor organization is responsible for negotiating for wages and working conditions. And alumni, former ball players, don't fall in that category. That being said, as a labor organization of which I head up, we are still very much involved and watch very closely the events, particularly those events that have a direct impact on retired ball players. we're looking at the fact that there was a great discussion about the salary cap and how that would reflect in an increase in pension benefits for the vast majority of retired ball players. We've been watching that situation very closely. We've been monitoring it because we know that it could have a great impact on a large number of guys. I think the reason that there, and it's not to say that the negotiations wasn't taking place in earnest initially, but I think you get to a point where, you know, it's a stalemate and you feel that you can bring a little pressure to bear by walking away from the table and letting them digest what you've said and you digest what they've said. And I think that it's always good to have a break once in a while because sometimes it can become very monotonous, extremely repetitious, and you want to make sure that as you're negotiating and those items that you're discussing are really taken into full consideration, as you hope that the things that you put on the table are taken into full consideration. So I think it's wise sometimes for them to take a break. I don't think it's wise necessarily to walk away from it entirely because as long as you're talking, I think that there's progress to be made.
Talking to George Martin here on the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza Show, former Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants, current NFL Alumni Association director. And, George, you know, I know you had the opportunity to speak to the NFL owners recently at New Orleans. Was it difficult to relay your message? Were they open to what you were saying? And what did you walk away with that meeting taking from your perspective?
Well, first of all, it was something that I had not been accustomed to as a ball player because generally that atmosphere was completely off limits to a former ball player, certainly an active ball player. So to walk into an environment like that and be received in the manner that we, the NFL alumni, were received, there are many, many owners that sit around that table and warmly embrace the presentation that I made. They were very excited about what the needs were as we had determined amongst our membership. And most importantly, there was a genuine sense of you are a valued commodity, even though we are retired ball players, and owners want to make an acknowledgement of that and begin to work toward bringing retired ball players back into the fold and making sure that their quality of life is commensurate with the sacrifices that they've made. So I was very encouraged. I was very pleased. And several of the owners and the general managers or head coaches came up to me afterwards, and they pledged their commitment. And that, to me, is just a milestone, as far as I'm concerned, for retired ballplayers.
Hey, George, Ralph Mancini here. You know, in a recent interview, you pointed out that, you know, you made it clear, you clarified to the Player Association that the retired ballplayers don't want to be pulled into these negotiations like second-class citizens. You know, sort of give us an idea of, you know, where a lot of these retired ball players are at this point. We're talking about guys who retired prior to 1993. Give us an idea of, you know, where a lot of these guys stand right now, guys that have, you know, that have been afflicted by certain diseases and by illnesses and that sort of stuff. I mean, we always hear about guys like, you know, Dave Dorson and Andre Waters, guys like that, dying young. I mean, has the situation gotten worse over the past 10 to 15 to 20 years, in your opinion?
Well, Ralph, I think you asked a very candid question. I think that's the relevant question today. And if you look at the contemporary news that's coming out amongst retired ballplayers, and most recently Terry Bradshaw came out with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and we don't know how severe the problem is amongst our retired membership, and that's why we have such an inordinate concern. We'd like to see the league become more aggressive and more responsible by conducting a full-scale survey and to investigate how widespread this is. But if we continue to have the people like Dave Dorsons and others who have gotten to a point where their ailments are so severe that they consider taking their own lives, I think that someone has to step forward and say that this may be a larger epidemic than any of us realize. And the other thing is that we do not want to be cast aside and after the dust settles and they take a reflective look on what is the status of retired ball players. We want to be part and parcel of the discussion as it's ongoing and not be an afterthought or, as you said, a second-class citizen status amongst the collective bargaining discussion. We feel that we have every right to be there and to be looked upon our needs as important as the active ball players.
Hey, George, I mean, I think it's really difficult not to sympathize with you guys and the retired players. I as somebody who was drawn to this industry as a fan, loving to watch you guys play the game and put it all out there on the field, I don't see how somebody couldn't. But, you know, let me ask you, what is it, you know, what would be fair? What is it exactly you guys want and what you think the league as well as the NFLPA should do for the retired players?
Well, I think it's very simple because you're not talking about an inordinately large population, first of all. And then secondly, you're talking about an industry that's a $9 billion industry. So we're not taking a lot of money to say that we want to bring the quality of life as it relates to pension plans up to a respectable level. When you have guys who have played in the league for 13, 14, 15, 16 years, and yet still their monthly pension amounts to $140, that equation is unacceptable on any front. So we can talk about what the right number is, but as we sit around the table, all of us will agree that that number is inordinately wrong. So let's look at how we can help these guys, how we can begin to address it, because I don't think it would take rocket science to say that we can start looking at the pre-1993 ball players. We can start looking specifically at those guys who took an early election for their retirement, and we can also look at the category of guys who elected their Social Security election. So when you look at that universe, it's not a large universe, and yet still it seems to be stymied and stalemated because I guess the league does not want to move forward on this. And I think that it's a travesty because in the interim, we're going to have other guys who are going to either die and decease in poverty because every year there's approximately 130 guys who are former ball players that pass away. And that to me is a travesty.
Hey, George, as somebody who's been, you know, that young kid, as we talked about, in 1975, happy to get drafted, looking to have this great NFL career, and now, you know, you're more experienced, you're more knowledgeable, you understand. There's all this information out there, you know, about the risk. If you could take yourself back to being that young kid again, how much of these young players coming into the NFL, do they listen and really understand what's going on and the potential risks out there?
Well, I think it's a fraction. I think it's a very – I mean, as they say, youth is wasted on the young, and we were all guilty of that. And even if we knew then what we know now, I don't think that any of us would change or alter our lives. But I think that there has to be a greater responsibility on the behalf of the league to indoctrinate these guys and to let them know what they have at stake. I mean, because you can't put a definitive price on your health. You can say it while you're young, yeah, I'll recover, I'll heal. But as you grow older, you realize that these infirmities will have a more severe impact on you. And, guys, let me just say this, because nothing has ever been put into the equation. We talk about the effects of a 20-game schedule, an 18-game schedule, 16, 14, whatever the number is. What is not put into the equation as it relates to NFL retired ball players is back in the day, particularly when I came along, I can tell you the training camps were more damaging than any game that I ever played in. And particularly when I was a rookie in 1975, our training camp was 2 months long, and we never wore shorts, and we hit every day, and every day was a two-a-day training camp. That is an accumulative effect that no one seems to be concerned about and wants to put into the equation.
Some remarkable facts here. George Martin, former Super Bowl champion, current NFL Alumni Association director, and, you know, I know that one of the current proposals in this whole negotiation revolves around this NFL rookie scale and, you know, basically, you know, paying some of these unproven players entering the league a little bit less money and reallocating some of that money to some of the current and retired players. George, how realistic is that to happening? Are the current players receptive to it? And what are some of the other things that you hope to come out of this whole collective bargaining agreement?
Well, I'd hate to say that it's a foregone conclusion because when it was first announced or at least presented a few months ago, I know that the NFLPA balked at the idea of imposing a rookie wage scale. It's my understanding that they have obviously softened their position and have agreed that some sort of limitation with regard to incoming rookies is acceptable. And we've heard anywhere from a pool of $100 million to $300 million as a set-aside fund or allocated toward pension plans for pre-1993 ball players. So, again, we applaud the fact that at least both sides are at least coming together and fundamentally looking at a way to address the needs of NFL retirees. But, yes, much more needs to be done. When you look at the career transition, I think that if something's not done with making sure that guys, as they leave the game, are prepared for life after, we're going to have a perpetual stream of guys who are going to be falling through the cracks, who are going to be ill-prepared, and who are going to be accustomed to a lifestyle of in excess of seven figures, over $1 million, and yet still won't be able to hold a job or find a job once they're done. So unless there's some definitive lifestyle adjustments, lifestyle changes, I think that we're only going to be creating more unfortunate victims among retirees unless it's addressed. The other thing that we are looking for is we're looking for better benefits as it relates to the disability, because we don't know what problems will be presented to a guy as he ages, as he gets older. I mean, the cumulative effect of playing in the NFL for multiple years is something that it varies. And some guys like myself would have gone through a 14-year career and come out relatively unblemished, so much so that they could walk across the whole width and breadth of the United States. And yet still some guys can play a minimum of years, 2 or 3 years, and have multiple surgeries, multiple injuries that will plague them for the rest of their lives. We want to make sure that there is a benefit plan and a benefit approach that will be at least embracing of that those guys that are in that situation and begin to get them the kind of help, whether it's joint replacement, whether it's dementia, whether it's Alzheimer's. And I know that there are some plans that exist out there through the league, but we still need better medical plans for our retirees.
Yeah, George, I remember when you were doing that walk, I believe we met you and spoke to you at the Heisman Trophy. You sat down with us there. You were an honoree when they gave out the Heisman a couple of years ago. George, I'm curious, how often do you get to interact with current players and potential draftees? Because it seems to me that's the best way for them to kind of understand a little bit is to talk to you guys, to meet you guys, to speak to the retired players.
Well, unfortunately, I don't get that opportunity very often. Unfortunately, I've been treated as persona non grata against the NFL PA, and that's really unfortunate, because here's an individual who has played 14 years, who is a former president of the NFL Players Association, who was involved in the labor negotiation, who went on strike to secure free agency and a lot of other the benefits that current players warmly enjoy. And yet still I don't have the opportunity to come back and share that wealth of knowledge and that institutional experience with guys who I think would be able to benefit from it. I think it's a shame, because if you have no respect amongst your own peers, even though you're a former ball player, it's an injustice. And I don't think that any of the current guys would want to be treated like that after they've had a long and successful career, particularly holding the positions of, on the labor side that I've held. So it's unfortunate, but again, we're certainly not crying over spilled milk. We have a very aggressive agenda that we're looking to implement with regard to the quality of life gains that that NFL ball players are seeking.
Well, George, you know, it's been a great pleasure talking to you and getting some perspective here from a retired NFL player such as yourself, who played 14 NFL seasons. And I must add, you only missed 6 games in your career, so quite a few hits that you accumulated. And I feel like we could have sat here and booked the whole 2-hour show here and spoke with you. I definitely would like to have you on sometime in the future, maybe to catch up and get some updates. Before we let you go, though, I do have to ask, because, you know, the linebacker is such a need for the New York Giants. I'm not sure how much you've been able to keep up with the team, but last time I checked, Pepper Johnson, Harry Carson, and George Martin aren't walking through that door. You think maybe the Giants will shore up that linebacker position here?
Well, I think that, first of all, I have every confidence in Jerry Reese. I think he's done an outstanding job as a general manager. I think his resume is growing leaps and bounds with every year. Tom Coughlin is a guy who I have the utmost respect for. I admire Tom. And, I thought that when the rumors were swelling last year about perhaps replacing Tom, I thought that was just so ill-advised. Let's face it, John Mara, who's now taken over the reins of the New York Football Giants, is cut from the same swath of his father, his illustrious dad, Wellington Mara, and I have been having close ties with that organization, and I know with every confidence that they're going to be back on top. They're going to have a great product out there because that's the kind of pride that permeates that entire New York Giant organization.
You hit the nail on the head. In my book, that's George Martin, NFL Alumni Association Director, Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants, giving us the update here on the NFL alumni retired players perspective. Excuse me. And, George, you know, great honor to have you on the show. Hopefully we can chat relatively soon and get an update. Always love to hear from you and love what you're doing. Keep it up and take care.
Guys, I'm honored. I thank you very much for allowing me to be on the show, and have a great weekend.
All right, thanks a lot. That's George Martin once again, Super Bowl champion with the New York Giants. And, guys, you know, this was a man amongst boys. And, you know, I got to say I got the opportunity to meet him back at the Heisman Trophy Award presentation a couple years ago. You know, this man walked across the country 3,000 miles and raised $2 million for 9/11. So,
true gentleman. I mean, what else can you say? He's a true gentleman.
Hey, you know, what he says carries weight, and he's not just out here blowing smoke up your rear end, folks. I mean, this guy knows what he's talking about, and, you know, people need to start paying attention and take notice and listening to what George Martin has to say. Hopefully we'll have him on again sometime in the near future. We'll keep you posted on that, but it's time to bring it on home, last 5 minutes of the show. And to do that, we have our NFL Draft Bible guru on the line, I believe, Joe Everett, joining us to wrap things up. Joe, how's it go?
Outstanding, fellas. Thanks for having me on. 12 days away from the best day of the year. I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah, but who's counting, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, just 12 days and 22 hours and 34 minutes, you know, no big deal.
There you go. Hey, Joe, while we have you on here, not a whole heck of a lot of time, but I did want to bring you on and talk some NFL draft, in particular about some of these prospects that have some character concerns surrounding them. What's some of the buzz that you're hearing, and what kind of impact could it have on their draft stock?
Well, obviously, the most recent stuff, fellas, is Nick Fairley. The report saying that he not only skipped out on some meetings at the Combine, but arrived to Indianapolis late. He's also skipped some private meetings with players. And, you know, seeing him drop out of the top 10 while Tennessee, you know, they were linked up at the hip, as it seemed, a month ago. But now, as a result of the Kenny Britt arrest, they have Julio Jones fall in their lap at 8. I wouldn't be surprised if they just say, well, sorry, Nick Fairley, you can miss meetings with someone else. We'll take a blue chipper right there in the top 10. So I think Fairley's hurting. And, I mean, obviously we've known multiple things about Ryan Mallett. So, I mean, his stock is always up in the air. But being that he's a quarterback, I still see him fitting in the first. And another guy I think also is Jimmy Smith, the cornerback. I mean, were it not for some maturity question marks, things surrounding his character, I think this guy's a lock for the top half of the draft, but as a result may feature into the back half of the first.
Talking to Joe Everett, NFL Draft Bible guru here. And Joe, you know, I know when I was younger, a lot of times I was guilty by association, even though I didn't actually commit the crime.
Not
but,
you.
But I got to say, you know, we take a look around here at the recent troubles that a Dez Bryant, that a Aqib Talib has had. And I have to ask and wonder, you know, how much does that hurt Jimmy Smith's draft stock? And, you know, how much more are NFL teams going to be aware of the character concerns? I mean, it's something that's been somewhat of a trend, I'd say, over the last 5 to 10 years, but maybe even in a greater spotlight this year.
Absolutely, especially the comparisons between Talib and Smith are very valid. A guy that was not very mature, had some issues even at Kansas that were documented. And Dez Bryant, I do have to admit, just being a little wrong. I mean, I was one of those guys saying, well, all he did was lie about a dinner with Deion Sanders. What's the bit? Well, where there was smoke, there is fire. And I think a lot of teams, for good reason, are now looking more in depth into the background of these kids. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised they let a guy like Ryan Mallett slip, a guy like Jimmy Smith, and they turn around and look at a Ryan Kerrigan or a J.J. Watt. Guys, they look right in the background, and there's just, you know, these guys are crystal. And I wouldn't be surprised to see folks like that, you know, just elevate their stock just because of the lack of character concern.
Well, you know, the latest that I'm hearing on Jimmy Smith is that during interviews, he's kind of telling a lot of teams out there that he's looking for a new life. He's looking forward to settling in a new city, and he wants to get away from that old crowd. Now, whether or not he's going to be successful in convincing teams that he's taking that new stance, you know, remains to be seen. But it seems at least that, you know, he's willing to make that change in his life and become a more mature individual. So, you know, I'll give that, you know, I'll give him credit for that. The will is there. Let's see if he actually carries through.
No, I could see that, just especially the fact that he's addressing it, and that, you know, I hate to sound like a psychiatrist here, but the first step is admitting you had an issue, Jimmy Smith. So, I mean, if he is willing to move on, I think, yeah, GMs would be more willing to just see him do right or give him that second chance.
Well, unfortunately, we're just about out of time. Joe, we'll get you back on next week for Extravaganza Part 2, same place, same time. This was the NFL Draft Bible Extravaganza for your host, Daniel Moglione, the Reverend Ralph Mancini. I am Rick Saratella. We'll see you next week, 7 p.m. Eastern time here on Blog Talk Radio. Make sure you log on to NFLDraftBible.com for all the latest news, updates, and information, and we will keep you posted on our guest scheduled for next week's show. For the NFL Draft Bible signing off, we'll catch you next time.